Welcome to the NJIOA Winter Retreat 2024, Time to Recover. The topic of this workshop is steps 2 and 3, and I am especially delighted today to introduce our speaker this morning, Patrice Jay. Patrice, you may unmute, and when you are ready, you may begin at any time. You have 30 minutes, and we thank you so much for being here.
All right. Good morning, everyone. My name is Patrice. I'm a sugar addict. And I'm a compulsive eater. And I'm also a recovering compulsive overthinker. Another charming attribute is a recovering perfectionist. And the last two items I just listed are definitely intertwined in my disease, but I didn't know that until I did a step 4 10 years ago. Anyway, side note. I'm so delighted and honored to be here. I really consider it a great privilege. I truly, truly do. And thank you, Allison, for hosting and for everybody involved in putting together the retreat. Robin is not in this meeting right now, but she asked me to speak, and I'm really grateful for that. And Tony Ann and Judy and everybody. So the topic is Time to Recover. That's the overarching theme of this particular retreat. And this particular meeting, I was asked to talk a little bit about step 2 and step 3. And before I kind of get into what this means for me and time to recover and whatnot, let me just ask Allison, would you like me to do a very brief kind of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now? Or do you want me to just get right into my riff on the stuff regarding step 2 and 3 and time to recover and what it means to me and all that?
Oh, tough choice. Patrice, we would love a snapshot of who you are, where you've been, and okay, what you're doing now. But yes, emphasis on okay, of course, on steps 2 and 3 for the group.
Okay. So here's a snapshot. My first OA meeting was in 1993. My second OA meeting was in 2013. That gives you an idea of the slow progression of my disease. Well, actually, it wasn't that slow. My willingness and hitting rock bottom was a bit slow. But my binge eating and sugar addiction really reared its ugly head when I was 18 years old. And I was working overseas at the time. And it's something, I'm from Canada. I left Canada. I got a job in New Zealand. I started working, and there was the disease. There it was. It just said, hello, I am now going to destroy you. And within 3 months, I had gained 30 pounds, and I was just binging on sugar. And I thought that a commercial weight loss program would help me. It did not. It did not help me at all. So I do come from a family of alcoholics and compulsive eaters. But that, according to the AA literature and the OA literature, is not why I am a compulsive overeater and a sugar addict. I'm a compulsive overeater and a sugar addict because I'm a compulsive overeater and a sugar addict. when I left New Zealand, and then I got another job overseas, and then I came back to Canada, I was a college student, and can we say food? Do we say food here, Allison? Do we give gory details? We thumbs up. Okay, good. I'm glad that we do. I don't like sanitizing my shares when it comes to my foodalog, if you will. But there was a point at time I was in my apartment as a college student, and I just was over the sink, standing over the sink with a loaf of sweet bread, but it had been clearly sweetened, and some margarine. I don't know what came over me. I just started eating the whole thing over the sink, and just crumbs going everywhere, inhaling it in like a food frenzy. There was a sense of frenzy to it. And after that, and the crumbs in the sink, and I'm just thinking, what just happened? What did I just do? I knew that was not normal, despite the fact that in New Zealand, I mean, I had been eating out of the garbage and just craziness. So somehow, some way, I found an OA meeting listing in the white pages. Remember the white pages back in the good old days? And so I went to one meeting as a 21-year-old, and I thought, okay, I'm not as bad as these people. Well, the truth is, I just wasn't ready. It took me 20 years to hit that rock bottom. And goodness gracious, I am grateful for the rock bottom. But I'll just try and keep my synopsis. And I like to talk, so it can be a problem. But anyway, fast forward 20, let me see, I guess it would have been about 17, 18 years. Around 2009, 2010, my disease really reappeared again and said hello. And my binging and my sugar addiction really, really started to ramp up. Now, was the weight gain dramatic? No. But were the cravings really starting to scare me? Yes. Was the amount of sugar ramping up that it took me to, quote, get my fix? Absolutely. And the frequency between the binges getting closer and closer? Yes. And that did scare me. And I really said, God, please help me. I remember it being in the parking lot of a 7-Eleven, having gone in, bought a whole bunch of sweet junk food and non-sweet junk food, sitting in the car in the parking lot with it in my lap, literally saying out loud to God, you guys, please help me. I do not want to do this. And of course, why would I want to do that? You remember how sick, most of you can relate how sick you feel after it just consuming copious amounts of sugar and junk food. You know what, you guys, I did do it because I'm totally powerless over sugar. That is the reality of my disease. Anyway, God heard my prayer. And slowly but surely, I started dipping my toes in the OA online podcasts from Los Angeles. And then I came across a book on sugar addiction. And there was a story in this book on sugar addiction by this woman who's not a 12-step woman. And she said that she went to a high school reunion. She bumped into a friend who had lost a lot of weight and was looking really healthy and glowing. She said, what did you do? And she said, oh, I'm a sugar addict. I'm in Overeaters Anonymous. That's what I do. Well, that was it, you guys. From there on, I just said, I have to do something. And I think OA is the only way this is going to turn around, because I really felt hopeless and I really felt helpless. So anyway, God gave me the courage to go to my second meeting 20 years later, which was in Red Bank, New Jersey. And it was the OA Saturday morning big book study meeting in Red Bank, New Jersey on July 20th, 2013. I will never forget the day, honey. You know why? Because on July 19th, 2013, it was my husband's birthday. And I was just in a total like sugar hangover, food fog. It was just a mess. It was just a total mess. And I wasn't even there for him. And we went out to eat. And I'm just like, really, I don't need the main course. Can we just get to the desserts? Like, it was just insane. Anyway, I just kept coming. So that's the miracle of this program. And then one time in August, so I started coming in July, a lady at the Neptune, New Jersey, 12 and 12, OA 12 and 12 writing meeting came up to me after the meeting and said, do you need a sponsor? And I was so scared. And I said, well, can we just try 30 days? Because I don't know if you're going to like me and I don't know if I'm going to like you. And we kind of laughed, you know. Anyway, you guys, that was the start of my journey. I got abstinent on August 11th, 2013, and I have not, by God's grace, it's a complete miracle. I mean, miracle. I just told you my 7-Eleven story. Hello, there's many of those. That I have not broken my bottom line abstinence in over 10 years. Like I said, I got abstinent August 11th, 2013. So anyway, that's what happened. That's what it was like. What happened? What it's like now? I live in Boston now, but I got my start in program in New Jersey, in Central Jersey. And I have a sponsor, obviously. He and I talk on the phone for an hour once a week as we work through the steps or study literature. I email him my food every day. I email him a nightly step 11 review on page 86. I have two sponsees and I have one food sponsee. And so that's my gig. And the Berkeley Heights, now New Providence, New Jersey meeting is still my home group, even though I'm in Boston. That's that. Now, decision time, step two and step three. Before I get into this and what it means to me and how it reflects on my journey, I want to share something with you that I believe my higher power put across my path. And I don't know if it's possible. Allison, can I do a screen share?
Yes, you may, Patrice, with pleasure.
Okay, let me just click screen share.
Should be
go.
Okay. All right. Can you just give me a thumbs up if you can still hear me? I'm having a little trouble with my AirPods.
Thanks. We can hear you. You're fine, Patrice. Keep going.
Okay, thanks. Okay. So I just wanted to share this with you. Way back when, you can see my handwriting in the top right-hand corner of this article. It says Eatontown Meeting, August 26, 2014. So Eatontown, New Jersey, which was one of the meetings I used to go to, it was a literature study. Anyway, we had a little workshop one day. And somebody, I don't know who, handed out this old article from the good old OA Lifeline magazine from July 1985. So time to recover. Well, what does that mean for me, you guys, right now? And again, I'm going to riff on step two and three and what it means to me. But even though I've been in program for over 10 years, every day I'm reminded that time to recover equals time to let go. So this is a great reminder for me. And I want to share this article with you from Lifeline, July 1985, time to let go. And I've not relapsed, but it doesn't matter. The article is still very poignant for me and presumably for you. During a recent relapse, I was brought face to face with the realization that self-will is killing me. No matter how enticing its promise of happiness appears, it is only temporary at best, and more often, it isn't happiness at all. Actually, self-will is a form of seduction into despair. It is deceitful, somehow making me think that if I succumb, I will be satisfied. I am learning that self-will is mental game playing. When I give in to its insistent beckoning, what I get is far from what I really want. I am beginning to see that self-will has a long, ugly history of making me miserable. I have found that self-will, when given its own preferences and devices, leads to bondage. Its appetite is insatiable, even in areas other than food. Self-will takes over my spending, for example. And of course, it has led me into deadly food traps time and time again. I am learning that giving into self-will and ignoring higher powers' will leads me off the road of serenity and into the ditch of despair. Allowing self-will to be in charge of my daily decisions has led only to an emotional roller coaster lifestyle and a pain-filled saga of weight-related problems. I am now attempting to look at myself and ask the question, isn't it time to let go? My self-willed power has given me a 40-year demonstration of its disastrous killing incompetence. How much more proof do I need that I require a power other than self-will? Higher power, please take over. Thy will be done, one moment at a time. So I just really wanted to share that with you, and I'll stop my screen share one sec, and let me get into the nuts and bolts of step two and three, what it means to me. But I just, it seems so poignant to me that this article should kind of reappear close to this meeting, because, you know, what is time to recover? What is letting go? It means more surrender for me. And, you know, as I pick up and look at step two, came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That means more surrender for me. I have to surrender to that power greater than myself to restore me to sanity. By the way, it strikes me that step two does not say the following. Came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to a smaller dress size. That's not what my big book says. It also doesn't say this. Came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to a greater measure of willpower. I don't have any willpower. That is why I'm here. I tried willpower for 42 years. I was 42 years old when I came into that Red Bank meeting back in 2013. So it strikes me that, you know, I came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. How did I come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity? It was my rock bottom. That is just a serious reality for me. I had tried everything, and I always had a higher power, by the way. Just as a quick side note, I converted to Christianity when I was working in New Zealand. So I had a higher power. in the Judeo-Christian worldview. Did it dawn on me, you guys, until I hit a rock bottom, like binging in the parking lot of Target, binging in the parking lot of ShopRite, binging in the parking lot of Walgreens, or binging in my garage and like hiding the wrappers from my husband? And yeah, did it dawn on me truly that God could help me, that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity? No, not right away, until I got really, really desperate and really scared. And I'll just give you a quick side note. I'm looking at the clock. I have 15 minutes. Let me tell you, I remember the times, and this is about a year or two before I actually came into that first, well, my second OA meeting in Red Bank, driving around doing errands. And the craving for sugar was so powerful. I'm thinking, I'm distracted. I'm trying to drive to the post office to mail a letter. And this craving in my mind, Dr. Silkworth, the phenomenon of craving, is saying, you need to stop there. Why don't you stop there and get that thing? Go on, just stop there. Go and get that thing. And I'm thinking, this is insane. I should not be in the business of stopping there and getting that thing. Here's my powerlessness. I stopped there and I got that thing because I'm completely powerless. Now, again, I think that kind of the turning point for me was sitting in my car in 7-Eleven going, God, please help me. I don't want to do this. And then, of course, step one, admitting I was powerless. Well, that I knew. And then step two, I did come to believe that God could restore me to sanity. But I do think that when I started working with my sponsor and we started working the steps, it wasn't a snap the fingers kind of thing, like, oh, okay, God's just going to restore me to sanity. I'm not going to binge on sugar anymore and just be a cool eat out of the garbage. And I'm not going to be spraying Mr. Clean on cookies in the garbage so I won't go back in and eat them. And even sometimes I did go back and eat them because I'm like, well, the Mr. Clean didn't get on this one. Like, let me be very clear about what my insanity was like around food. I do not want to sanitize it. It was not cute. But again, I was powerless. So working the steps with my sponsor helped a lot. And actually, when I came into program, side note, I was going to 5 meetings a week in around the Jersey Shore area. So I was going to a couple of big book meetings, or was it mainly just that one on Saturday? So I was reading the big book, but my sponsor from that Neptune meeting wanted to take me through the steps using the OA 12 and 12. And the OA workbook, the first edition, the brown one. And then, you know, we did the step four, though, not via the workbook. We did it, quote unquote, the big book way with the columns. So just as a side note, that is initially how I worked step two and three, that way. Anyway, side note, let me move on, though. And I just want to say again, I want to make this very clear to all of you that it's important for me to say out loud because my disease has this thing called disease amnesia. Are you familiar with this part of the disease? Yeah, the built-in forgetter. Yeah, hello, anyone? Also, my disease tells me I don't have a disease. Does anyone get that little disease lie coming into your brain every so often? And it does tell me that I came to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to a lower number on the way scale. That's where this goes for me, you guys. And I'm telling you, I've tried that and it didn't work. Side note. Okay, step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood him. Supposedly, I took that step circa September 2013. But I have to be really honest with you guys. My self-will has not been completely removed or tamed, if you will. And there are many days that I struggle with making a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. Perhaps not in the grand in a grand sense, in the grand gesture of step three, but smaller things. Like I have to ask myself, okay, what am I hanging on to? What am I still clinging on to? What old idea am I clinging on to that is preventing me from turning my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him? And, you know, I'm not sure if you're aware of this or not, but can you believe that after 10 and a half years in program, World Service in Rio Rancho, New Mexico has not sent me my certificate of completion? I know you're shocked. Yeah, I didn't get the trophy. They didn't send me a trophy saying, good work. You're done now. I'm not done now. every day I have to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. But for me, you guys, to be honest, it takes a lot of practice for me to do that. It takes a lot of practice. And, you know, to go back to my article from Lifeline 1985, you know, whoever wrote this is talking ad nauseum about the perils of self-will. Well, listen, I told you that I came into program when I was 42 years old. For my brain and way of thinking to transform 42 years of a certain way of thinking overnight 10 years, that's just not what's happened for me. It's been little things here and there, like, you know, often just realizing, okay, I am powerless not only over sugar and food, I am powerless over that person. I am powerless over that circumstance. And I turn it over. I try to turn it over. God, take this, take these little details, like certain things, like, I don't know what to assign that student. What repertoire should I assign them? I'm not sure. Did I say the wrong thing? God, help me. You show me. God, show me what to do. And I'll tell you that on our little flyer that we had, it said, the column, it said, faith has to work, and actually I think Allison might have read this, faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we perish. Wow. Bill didn't say faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, but if it doesn't, I can resort to self-will and be fine. That is not what he said, and he should know. You know, but again, let me talk a little bit about step two and step three, or actually all the steps even, and just my general journey. I see I have a few minutes left in program. And I want to go back to something I said earlier with regard to my disease tells me I don't have a disease. So I'm in my office right now, my home office, and in the corner here, I'm kind of pointing, you can kind of see, I have a lamp. And many years ago, someone gave me a Beanie Baby snake. Do you all know what a Beanie Baby is? You know what those cute little Beanie Babies are, right? Okay. Well, someone gave me a Beanie Baby snake and I found it about 2 weeks ago and I have it hanging on my lamp. Why do I have it hanging on my lamp? For program reasons, I'll explain. It reminds me, and not to philosophize or to theologize, I'm neither a theologian or a philosopher. I am someone who didn't eat out of the garbage this morning. Let's be real about my, you know, who I am and what I am, okay? But I look at it every so often because it reminds me of delusion and deception in the garden, okay? Book of Genesis. Mine is a disease of self-delusion, and it is a disease where deception is so powerful, right? The big book talks about a cunning, baffling, and powerful disease. But on page 62, it says selfishness, self-centeredness, that we believe is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion is the second one, and then a couple other things. I'd have to turn to page 62. I don't remember the other two. Probably fear and dishonesty. Self-delusion. Okay. I came to believe a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Where does self-delusion rear its ugly head every now and again? Well, like I said earlier, came to believe that a smaller body, a smaller dress size, a smaller tag in my jeans, a better looking angle in a photo or video, looking thinner, would restore me to sanity. That is such a disease lie. Now, it can be a slippery slope because on the other hand, I have to be careful that I'm not in denial. Like, well, you know, it's not a big deal. You can just food plan, whatever. No, not whatever. I need a food plan, definitely. But then, you know, step three, getting back to the self-delusion aspect of my disease, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him, as we understand him. There's some things you can still hang on to, Patrice, because you're smart enough. Some things aren't that big of a deal. Really? You need to turn that over to God? That's nothing. You should be strong enough to figure that out on your own. You're going to turn that over? That's stupid. really? I mean, come on, figure it out, girl. Do you understand those lies? Did you get the little dialogue that I had going there? And, you know, faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us or we perish. 24 hours a day. Okay. Okay. All right. I don't have to morbidly project. I know the nightly review on step 11 says, you know, are we drifting into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection? I don't typically drift into morbid reflection. I am more tempted to drift into morbid projection. In other words, a case of the what ifs. Well, what if this happens? And what if that happens? And what if I don't have enough? And what if so-and-so doesn't do the thing I need them to do? And what if? Whoa, hang on. Patrice, did you or did you not take step 3 back circa October 2013? Making a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understood him. Yes, I did. Okay. Then you can pause when agitated or doubtful and ask God for the right thought or action. Chill, man. But you know, guys, we are told in our AA big book that fear is a corrosive thread that is something that we that I still contend with, despite the fact that supposedly I have made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Honestly, though, like I said earlier, and not to repeat too much, it takes a lot of practice for me. I am a slow learner with some of these things. So I'm going to wrap up and just say this. Here's what my disease told me. Patrice, you don't need to go to this thing today. Just, yeah, cancel or don't agree. Robin asked you, do you really need to do it? You've got better things to do. That is the disease. That's my beanie baby snake on my lamp. I do need to be here. And mine is a disease of isolation too, by the way, okay? So listen, I'm looking, I scroll down, oh, 32 participants. Well, praise God, because you know what my disease wants? 0 participants. It just wants me being the lone ranger trying to do this thing on my own, basically working a diet with a nice group of people. It doesn't want me doing anything that involves other fellows in OA. So I'm super grateful to be here. And I think you're a bunch of rock stars and that you're totally awesome. And I have 2 minutes left, but you know what, Allison, really, I think I've said everything I need to say. So I'm just going to wrap up and say, God bless you all. And it's a joy, a pleasure, and a